Hi, this is Sarah Motley. And for those that are confused, I know I started off saying Sarah Coleman, but I'm now divorced, so I'm back to my maiden name. So this is Sarah Motley, and joining me today is Shane Pardo. Shane, unlike the others, luckily, he has been released from prison. So Shane, would you introduce yourself?
A significant amount of prison time, like a lot of the people that will end up being on the podcast. But like Sarah said, fortunately, I made it out.
So could you please just share with us, Shane, your original sentence, the crime, and how much time you did on that sentence?
Yes, back in 2000, I was arrested and ultimately charged with first-degree murder and conspiracy to commit first-degree murder. After trial and everything, I was found guilty of both of those counts, and they gave me a natural life sentence for each one, suspended down to 55 years concurrent, and ran it, ran them together, which is what concurrently means. And after about 14 and a half years, like I said, I got locked up, I believe it was, in February 2000, and I got released May 19th, 2014. On a modification of sentence hearing.
And can you explain to us, Shane, what you did, how you could come from a 55-year sentence doing 14 and a half years? Maybe, for family members or me, I'm an advocate, where I can help the other guys that would hear a 55-year sentence and deem that hopeless, like they're never getting out. Could you tell me what made the difference in your time being cut?
Well, there was a few factors. It was a questionable case anyway as to how much guilt I had with my involvement. I had two co-defendants. That was a little iffy. But the main thing was the progress that I made while I was incarcerated. My sentence, I got a number, but it's still a life sentence, mm-hmm. And a lot of guys used to tell me, they'd ask me, why are you even doing what you're doing? Why are you getting, why are you even trying? Why aren't you just trying to enjoy yourself,
Mm-hmm.
And, because I didn't spend a lot of time at the tabletops and everything like that, playing games, I was always in my cell studying, reading, etc. But what really the best piece of advice I could have for somebody that is facing a lengthy sentence is the same thing that one of my aunts told me who retired, from a courthouse as a clerk. She said, get involved in everything you can. Do everything you can to help yourself, to better yourself, and make sure that the judge is aware of it. Write them every 6 months, so you're not just a case number, that you're a person. Because one of the things, we go to court and we go through an experience like this, and while it means everything to us, it's something we'll never forget. But a judge, how many defendants do they see in one day?
Absolutely.
How many defendants do they see in a week? It's hard to remember anything other than, maybe some horrific particulars to a specific case, so you want to stay in their mind, not just as a court docket number, but as a mm-hmm. name, as a person. And so I did that. Straight out the gate in the detention center waiting to go to trial, I was getting involved in different programs, any and everything I could, even if it wasn't something on a topic that I felt particularly related to me,
mm-hmm.
Why not participate anyway to broaden my knowledge in areas that I'm unfamiliar with? You never know when knowledge like that might come in handy.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, continued that trend. I used to tell some of the guys that I spoke to that, if they're going to get this time out of me, then I'm going to make this time matter as much as I can.
Absolutely.
And if I'm going to be sitting in prison, well, this ain't going to be my prison. This is going to be my university.
Absolutely. I love it.
They got a library. I can get all the free books I want, and just I don't have nothing but time to study. I actually think I'm nearsighted now, you know, because I've read so much for such sustained periods of time. You know, I look at a book, I'm focused, I look up, I can't see nothing.
Wow. Absolutely.
Yeah, but I did that, and after I was found guilty, you know, and I went into the prison system, I started out at the CUT, you know, the Maryland House of Corrections, which I don't know how many people may know this now, but it is now tore down because the officers were getting murdered and everything. You know, it's crazy that a couple officers get murdered in that facility, get it shut down, but the countless, you know, human beings that are labeled as inmates get murdered there, and it's they don't care.
Wow.
But, you know, yeah, things like that just always kind of just amaze me because it seems so just out there and obvious that it couldn't possibly go on, but it does. But I started writing the judge every 6 months, and I was just honest. You know what I mean? I've said some things in letters that most people probably would not, but not in a disrespectful way. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things I called her on is like, how could you give me 55 years and tell me, because they said on the record in the transcripts, you know, she said, you know, after 4 days of trial, I still don't know who did what. It all depends on who, even I don't know who to believe. And the state's attorney followed her up on record stating that, yeah, after extensive police investigation, no one would ever know what took place, you know, except for them three and the deceased. And I'm like, well, how can you give me 40 more years than the next person? But, you know, I would be straightforward with her like that and express my feelings, you know. Yeah, I'd always start out the letters like, hi, how are you? I'm just writing to update you on my progress. You know, this is how I've been feeling lately. This is what I've been going through. This, you know, the struggle. Let them know what you're going through. Wow. Let them know that you're suffering for your mistakes, you know. And you know, don't try to get out of it, but just man up and take it and acknowledge it. You know what I mean? And then I'd say, you know, this is what I'm working on. These are what some of my goals are. You know, she knew I had a passion to work with at-risk youth. So I remember back in the early 2000s, I told her, you know, I want to write a book one day. I said, hopefully I get another chance in life because I'd like to mentor at-risk youth and things like that. And then years and years later, I'm like, well, I guess I'm not getting out anytime soon. So I'm going to find a way to mentor at-risk youth in here. Wow. And then that's when we down in ECI, you know, developed that mentor program, and I did it. I eventually got a book published. You know, I got my college degree and my associate's degree in business management. I got a diploma in sex and drug abuse counseling. You know, I participated in all the social work groups and everything like that, facilitated groups. And you know, I was a tutor down in ECI for 5 years, helping people get their GEDs and stuff like that, you know. And I mean, I've seen kids, you know, that, you know, when they finally earned their GED, and it was a struggle, huh? I mean, it was a frustrating struggle, but they were working, so we kept working to help them. You know, when they got it, I mean, they cried, you know, real tears of joy, because some of them, you know, I've seen a guy cry on his 21st birthday because he was from inner city Baltimore and never thought he'd live to see 21, you know, and that's actually one of the same ones that, man, it was a struggle getting him his GED, but he broke down crying when he did, you know. And I mean, he was one of the youngest, hardest working, mature people I ever knew. Yeah. You know, and he's got a lot of time, and you know, I get that law degree. Well, I'm in university now, going to get my law degree, as you're aware of.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, he's someone I'm going to try to do everything I can to get him another chance if he's still in there.
You're amazing. Listen, guys, as you guys can see, like, I don't need to interview him, because since he's been out, we'll get together and we'll talk, and we try to talk, like, maybe, well, it hasn't been that often now, but we can be on the phone for like 4 hours, and it's like we just got on the phone. So I will clue you guys into how I met Shane. When I met Shane, I was volunteering down in ECI, and he wasn't in my class, but I thought you had the coolest walk around, Shane. You used to have the pencil or whatever behind your ear and whatnot, and I thought you had, like, the best posture and whatnot, and he stood out to me. He wasn't in, I don't think he was in either of our classes, but I would see him passing in the hallway and stuff. So I followed up with the guys because, you know, we did a book discussion group. So I followed up with the guys and stuff, and somehow I got to talk to Shane. And Shane was a non-believer at first because his thing was these guys, you know, down here, they're believers and stuff, and hell, I'm doing better than they are. You know what I'm saying? He's like, I don't know if you remember that conversation, but that was his claim to fame. So what happened, I believe I sent the book to Howard Bay. It was, the book was called The Shack. Absolutely. The book was called The Shack. You guys, they just made a movie on it and stuff. So I did a book discussion group on that. And I had Howard Bay give it to Shane. And I'm trying to tell you, it was like that book right there and prayers and whatnot. Because I don't know. He was receptive. He really, I mean, it's not like he didn't want it. So he didn't like fight it. And so when he got, absolutely. So he read the book, and I remember when he called me, and I was so excited. I was just like high-fiving God, like, yes. But so we've been, you know what I mean? Like, we've just been cool ever since. So let me ask you, Shane. So you going in with,
oh, that wasn't the question.
Oh, no. You're silly. No, I love Shane, guys. So, Shane, let me ask you. So, you going in to, so what was the breakdown of, like, with black people, Latinos, and then, like, white people? Were you the minority in there?
Hell yeah, white people are the minority. and half of them are just messed up people. I'm like, damn, I wish they weren't white.
Really?
But, it's, you know, whites are the minority, but it's more broken down specifically in Maryland, what geographical location you're located in with that prison. Because even though, you know, I'd say African-Americans, you know, make up the majority, mm-hmm. no matter where you go, you mm-hmm. know. And then you got, I'd say, you know, Caucasians are the next largest group. And then you got, you know, your Hispanics, you know, Asians are sprinkled in there here and there, but they're far few, you mm-hmm. know. But even though you go to Hagerstown, the whites are going to get catered to mm-hmm. more than anyone else because you're working with them, you know, the YCOs, you know, you're out there in the farmland.
Yeah.
You go to, like, Baltimore, it's not going to be good to be white. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it ain't a bad, bad thing, but, you know, prisons are typically, a lot of things are along racial lines, and it might not be, you know, like, very extreme, you know what I mean? But typically, you know, people stick to their own, you know, and even their, each group has their segmented subgroups.
Where did Shane fit in at?
Well, you know, one of the things that I always hear from people, and it could be somebody who's, you know, in a high up in an organization within the prison system, I guess I could say, mm-hmm. or a CEO or assistant wardens or anything. I mean, I've had, you know, high up people from Reisterstown compliment me and everything, you know, after seeing me speak at some of the mentoring graduations. But, you know, they all seem to say two of the same things. And I'm one of the most genuine and sincere people, or no, the most genuine and authentic people they've ever met. You know, mm-hmm. so it's got to be something about that to where it just, you know, I had one CO one time I used to work for when I was a clerk, and he was a sergeant. He said, you know, everyone recognizes hard work and sincerity. And he's like, Pardo, because we used to call by, you know, they call us by our last names. He said, you're oozing with that. He said, this was back in like 2006. And mm-hmm. he said, if you just keep doing what you're doing, you're not going to do all that time.
Mm.
And, you know, yeah, I mean, you know, I generally wanted to help people. I wasn't in there. You got people sitting there trying to act like they're, you know, great in character and stuff like that. Then they're, you know, doing some behind the scenes stuff, you know, I mean, to each their own. But, you know, they would present themselves one way when they were, you know, in plain sight. But then they were doing, like, deviant, you know, crazy stuff inconsistent with that character behind the scenes. And a lot of people knew that, but I wasn't, you know, my walk matched my talk, and so guys respected that. And mm-hmm. it's almost like, you know, a lot of people don't like COs, but I tell you what, a CO who is a jerk and by the book and just a, I don't know, for lack of a better term, a ball buster, mm-hmm. you know, if he's the same way every day and that's who he is through in, you know, they're going to respect him, even though they might hate his guts, but mm-hmm. they will respect him, and he will get more respect from the inmate population than the CEO who one day wants to be your homeboy and is cool, and then the next day wants to write you a ticket because he's in a bad mood.
Mm.
You know?
Consistency.
There are CEOs that don't fare well.
mm-hmm.
You know, and so my consistency and character, I think, is what really, you know, won a lot of favor from, you know, members of every population within the prison system.
Mm. So let me ask you, homosexuality in the prison. I told you I didn't know where I was going. So homosexuality. So what do you think, Shane, of the guys, right, that are actively in relationships? They're married. They have women coming down there to see them. And then you understand those that live dual lifestyles. Is there a lot of that going on in there?
See if I can try to put a number on it. I mean, it's prevalent, you know. I mean, I would say that at least I'd have to say at least 30-40% of the inmate population is engaged in some type of homosexual activity.
What?
Yeah. I don't know. That might be high. I mean, honestly, don't hold me to that. Like, I'd have to ask it Howard Pay's opinion and, like, you know, rap and all, because I'm not sure, you know what I'm saying? Because it may just have been that where I was, the different places I specifically was just higher in activity than some of a lot of the other places. So I wouldn't really have an accurate representation of, you know, department-wide, DOC-wide, what the statistics might be. But it was prevalent. I mean, there was guys with boobs in there, man. I mean, you know, and like, listen, man, to each their own. Like, I ain't gonna judge you.
Uh-huh.
I'm saying, I might not agree with your lifestyle. I might not. That might not be my cup of tea. You know, but like, there are certain lines. Like, there'd be guys doing stuff with other dudes in the day room, where the TV and all is, where the phones
in front of people,
oral sex, stuff like that. Yeah, and my thing is like, dude, I really don't feel like seeing a girl giving a dude head out.
Okay, so we went from G-rated all the way to X, guys.
I'm telling you, I got some pet peeves, man.
No, I understand.
One of them, you know? I
completely understand. I think the problem that I have with that, my thing is this right here. If that's your bag, let it be your bag. Wear that bag. You understand what I'm saying? But I think the thing that's unfair, you understand what I'm saying, is to be one way in prison, and then you understand what I'm saying to come home.
Yeah, I got way off topic, didn't I?
No. Listen, I told you before we did this.
In regards to relationships, you know what I mean? And I know what you mean. Like, dude, I would see guys on visits with girls who I'm like, damn, like, man, how's he keeping her? And then he's sneaking into a cell with some fugly freaking dude missing teeth.
Ew.
You know? And I mean, like, it's you know what they need to do to really supplement the state's budget? They need to just put freaking closed circuit cameras in every part of the prisons and sell, you know, subscriptions for anybody to log on and view it that they want. You know, obviously you couldn't have it in bathrooms, but hey, don't you think family members be like, oh, let me log in and see what's going on down ECI, you know, looking around through the cameras. They'd make a shitload of money like that. And they would put an end to a lot of the tomfoolery going on.
But they would never do that. They would absolutely never
do worse shit than them.
Absolutely. That's what we were going to get on, the corruption within the
insane.
Within the institutions and stuff. So what makes, do you think that the officers come in bad, or you think that you know, the men having all that time on their hands, do you think that they're cunning and they're the ones that make them. I mean, how does something like that partake?
Both, man. Mm-hmm. When it comes to subjects like this, it's almost like the whole damn nature nurture debate. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? It's not one, it's not the other. It's a culmination of both in varying levels depending on, you know, what the other circumstances and situational variables are. In this instance, you know what I'm saying? It's just like, in a lot of instances, they're brainwashed in the academy. You know what I mean? They're coming in, starting job day one. You know what I'm saying? That every person they meet with a six-digit number or whatever, I think they're using the state ID numbers now or something.
Yes, but,
You know, we all have an ulterior motive. We are just trying to figure out how to exploit you and use you for our gain and stuff like that, you know? And in truth, a lot of people are, but a lot of people are not, you know? And so that affects some of the offers where they're coming in with that perspective already. So, I mean, of course that's going to put anybody on edge. And, you know, they're going to feel like they got to prove a point and establish their authority. You know, and then I've seen CEOs, I mean, I wasn't always doing the right thing in prison, so I'm not going to sit here in front like I was.
Okay.
So when I was in the Patuxent Institution, I was trying to make some wine, you know, which I'm not good at, so that phase didn't last long.
Can you explain to us, what is that? Is that called the jailhouse kemp or gimp or something like that?
Jump, it's called jump, pooch. I mean, it's like homemade wine. You're basically taking fruit, adding sugar and stuff like that, and yeast, so it'll ferment, you know, keep it hot somewhere. But I needed a container to do it in. And I remember this guy's name. He just started, and he was like African. Like, he was not, you know, from America, you know, and his name was like Angelore or something, but AJ for short. Now he was cool with me because he caught me dead up going in this damn cleaning room to get this big container that's perfect for making something in. And so when he caught me, he's like, you know, what are you doing? And I'm like, oh man, AJ, I need this for something. He's like, I know you're gonna make that jump. And I'm like, oh man, come on, AJ, right, can I have it? And he's like, okay, but if you get caught, I didn't know nothing about it. So I'm like, okay, cool, you know, like, all right. And you know, roll out. It only took about a month for inmates to be messing with that man. And he was like hell on wheels, man. He was an a-hole.
Really?
Even to me. I mean, like, I seen it, and I'm like, damn. He would have been a good officer if people weren't getting over on him. But people were getting over on him, you know, taking his kindness for weakness and just putting him in bad situations and stuff like that, to where, yeah, he's probably one of the biggest jerks at Patuxent if he's still there. He's probably got some rank by now, though.
Wow. So what about sex between an inmate and an officer?
Oh, it goes on, you know. I feel like I missed out like I did in high school, you know. I mean, I don't know where all the high school teachers were when I was in school doing that kind of stuff. It would probably make me pay more attention, but you know, I really didn't get involved in that going through the prison system either, you know. And I mean, I've had female guards make passes at me, you know, but in my mind, I already know that there is a very high population, you know, in the inmate population with HIV or full-blown AIDS.
Jesus.
And they are just roaming around in you know, general pop, GP. And you know, in my mind, I'm like, man, if this chick is being forward enough to holler at me, then I know she would be with another inmate. And she's probably already, you know, hooked up with other inmates. And if that's the case, they probably, you know, is wrong, because I imagine that they're, you know, it's not going to look good if she's trying to come in here with condoms. You know what I mean? So, I mean, the inmate ain't ordering no damn condoms. You know, we can't walk up 7-Eleven. So I don't see, you know, unless they try to get one of them latex gloves, which if they can use that out of medical, I mean, God bless them, you know. But, I mean, you know, so they're
doing Shane, you are a fool. And, oh, my gosh.
Yeah, let me tell you something. When I was in Patuxent on C2, we went to lunch. And when we come back, we all knew that the CO that was working at day, this female, had something going on with one of the dudes there. And so then he stayed back. All I'm going to say is, when we walked on the tier, we knew instantly what had been going on.
Ew.
And I'm telling you, it was like a damn, you know, containment zone.
Ew.
I mean, it was just like, do not enter, man. It was just So I'm like, yeah, I'm good, man. You know what I mean? I don't want no STD. I want to come to prison, get out early on a life sentence, and then die from some sexually transmitted disease I got from some loose CO.
You're so smart, Shane. Oh, my God. I got to have you back. You're crazy. So what about...
One buddy says I'm the smartest, craziest guy I know.
Yeah, you're friggin' nuts. Okay, so what about the volunteers that come in? And the relationships between the volunteers and the COs. I mean, not the COs, the volunteer and the men. Yeah, I know. I know.
I've been upset with myself for missing some opportunities on my own behalf. I'm like, shit.
You just missed out all the way around the board, huh?
Years and years and years and years and years just being stuck around a bunch of ugly dudes, you know? Uh-huh. You know, yeah, you got these pretty women coming in that you know, hey, one of them likes you, you know, he's wanting to be intimate with you. Fuck it, man. You know what I'm saying? Who knows if you'll ever get another chance again. And not being, you know, Abraham Maslow on his hierarchy of needs, sex is a human need, man. It is wrong and inhumane to take this from inmates.
Absolutely. I agree. I totally. Yeah. I wish they would have, not for me, but I wish that they would have conjugal visits. I mean, they should set up a reward system. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's the same thing in place for family day. You want to go to family day, you better not get a ticket within, you know, 12 months of applying or whatever.
Yes.
Imagine if they had conjugal visits that if you can establish, you don't have to be married, but if you have this girlfriend or just some girl willing to come see you, mm-hmm. you know, then it's okay, you know, pass the security checkpoints, but the requirements on the inmate part is you can't be gang affiliated. If you are gang affiliated, you got to drop your flag or this, that, and the other. Man, you know how many people be dropping their flag for that? You know how many people would be staying out of trouble to go visit a girl, you know, and I would charge. I'd be like, look, man, you guys get the little, you get DOC to invest in some of them little double wide trailers or a single wide trailer, post them up, a bunch of them out there, you know, for $50 an hour, $100 an hour. If you meet the criteria once every 3 months, you can get in one of them little trailers for an hour. I would pay $100 for an hour in the trailer with my girl. And I'd stay out of trouble.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. But I think the gang members need love too. I'm just joking.
Saying, like,
I'm joking.
You know, I tell you what, they target gang members. So, like, anything worthwhile, that's one of the first things. Can't be gang affiliated.
Wow.
I mean, they're discriminated against, you know?
Yeah. So, why do you think so many go in and join the gangs? Because I know a lot of people say that even the Muslims, like, they double as a gang also. So, why do you think that it appeals? There's that appeal so much to people when they go into prison to join a gang. You think it's for safety reasons or what?
Well, again, I don't think, I think in some instances it's people who are scared and want protection. There's strength in numbers, you know? And I think in a lot of instances that's what it is, you know? But I know I got good brothers, man, who were gang affiliated, and I can't really wrap my head around why, you know what I'm saying? I mean, I know, like, when you package a lot of them up and you're trying to sell it, they come across good, family, like, oriented, brotherhood, this, that, and the other, have each other's back, da 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 da, you know what I mean? But that's seldom ever how it plays out. And I mean, during my incarceration too, I mean, I've seen more gang violence is gang member against gang member in the same gang than this gang against that gang.
Wow.
I mean, that happens a lot too, but there's way more incidences of where some happened where somebody within this particular gang did some to where now they're getting their head cracked open. So wow. I'm like, man, you know, like, why? You know, my thing was like, there's some very intelligent people in gangs as well. But I already know, man, if I ever join something like that, I'm coming in at the bottom or something. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I have a thing with authority, man. I am not taking orders from somebody I know is not even half as intelligent as I am. I mean, goddamn. You know what I mean? Like, fuck, man. I don't always make the smartest decisions, but God, I ain't that stupid either. You know? I'm not going to be no dummy for somebody holding knives and drugs, and you ain't going to exploit me, you know? I'd rather die than get exploited, so.
Wow.
Yeah, that's right. Like I told my one PO when I first got out, I'd rather die on my feet than live on my knees, and any unjust law is no law at all. That's St. Augustine.
Shane, you are so, listen, that is our 30-minute mark. I can't believe it's went so fast.
I know. Well, at least they got a taste of how it is when we actually just, you know, talking on the phone.
Exactly. So, guys, listen, I'm definitely going to have Shane on again because we listen to what we covered in all that time. I think we should co-host Shane. I think I want to make you my co-host because you're friggin' vicious. But
I don't know if they could handle that, man. We might get, you know, banned from the airwaves.
Exactly. I love you. Listen, guys, this is Shane Pardo. And I promise you guys, I'll be back. If anybody has any questions or anything like that I can go back and, speak to Shane about, just let me know.
I mean, if anybody needs to talk, I mean, you know, you can put them in touch with me, too. I mean, you know, I'm all over the place, but I'll try to find time somewhere.
Definitely. And if any of you that are listening that has loved ones that are, you know, potentially getting ready to go to prison or something, I mean, he's living proof that just because, you know what I'm saying, they man says one thing, God can say something else. You understand? So 55 years, he did how many years on it, honey?
14 and a half.
14 and a half years. You understand what I'm saying? He should still be in prison. Oh, we're going to get to the family, how the family felt about that on our next one. So, yeah, Shane, I'm going to come back.
It's going to be a multi-part miniseries.
Exactly. We got so much to talk about. I'm freaking excited.
Right.
But anyway, guys, I'm going to let you guys go. So, let me log off. Yeah, so Shane is saying goodbye to you guys. And let me log off of here. Hold on. Let me see if I can save this.